on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By Subway. Introducing the Italian hero from Subway. Stacked with capicola, mortadella, and Genoa salami with oil, vinegar, and oregano. Taste the authentic flavor of the Subway Italian hero, limited time only. By PenFed Credit Union. PenFed's got great rates for everyone. And by Sam's Club. Sam's Club is thanking those who serve. Active and former members of the U.S. military are invited to join or renew their membership with up to a $25 gift card simply for signing up. Join or renew today. See Club for details.
This is the National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there and their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
Boy, we have had quite a celebration in Kansas City. We're based in Kansas City. The 100th anniversary of World War One.
Huge deal.
Big deal. And the only World War One museum in existence is here in Kansas City.
Yeah, and what a place.
And we've got Matt Naylor, museum president, CEO. Dr. Matt Naylor is with us. Matt, how are you?
Terrific. Thank you.
Great to have you back on the show. Have you been a little busy lately?
Well, you could say that.
Man, you know what was so cool, living in Kansas City and seeing the French Air Force come in, man, that was unbelievable.
Yeah. What a spectacular sight, flying over the memorial, exhaust beautifully, colored there. It was a spectacular moment. And what a commitment. You know, the French came to do this to say thank you because of what the United States did in helping liberate that country, not once, but twice.
And you know, it's got to be kind of amazing for you, Matt, every day when people come into the museum and they learn about those things, just like you were talking about with the French appreciation and that kind of a thing. And to kind of get their eyes opened about the war and everybody that was involved, right?
Well, it's a real messy war. You know, this is one of the ones that is more difficult to understand. Mm. And it was in Europe, you know, in countries that don't exist now, empires that no longer are there. And the war which swept up every inhabited continent of the globe and then, you know, drew the U.S. into it in a very painful, difficult process of decision-making. So at the museum here, we unpack that complicated story, help people understand it. You're able to look at, you know, different to other museums, we tell a global story. So you're able to see what the experience was of the different countries involved. And then, of course, to be able to see the impact that it had in the United States and continues to have to this very day, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the point I wanted to make that, you know, people say, well, who cares about World War I? That was 100 years ago.
Sure.
Well, those things that occurred still steer our foreign policy today.
Yep.
It has determined so many things. In the past 100 years, and who knows for the next 100 years, and what a tragic occasion that was, event.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, I have a question for you, and it has to do with a museum, and it wasn't that long ago. You know, I'm going back maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, 15 years. I mean, the museum, the whole grounds there was in somewhat of disrepair.
Right. And so, you know, the story is an incredible one. We began collecting in 1920. The people in the city bandied together to honor those who served and to create a tribute for peace, of the memorial being opened in 1926, funded by the people, you know, of Kansas City. An extraordinary outpouring of support. And then some deferred maintenance issues caught up, as they did with a lot of civic type of structures in the 1980s, moving into the 90s. But the people of the city responded again, and they said that this isn't right. We've got to remember those who served. We've got to restore the memorial to its former prominence. And in the process, then, they created an extraordinary museum worthy of its collection, the most comprehensive collection of World War I archival materials in the world. And then that opened with the designation by the United States Congress as the National Museum in 06, to be joined by the National Designation for the Memorial in 2014. So we're honored to have that. We don't receive federal funding, so we're free of the any constraints that might come with that, but we're honoured to have the designation as the National Museum and Memorial. And it's really the people of the region who have made this happen. They ought to be proud of what's been accomplished here at the National World War I Museum and Memorial.
Now, when it was originally built, you mentioned that the funds were raised locally, and I'm sure you have you know the numbers by heart probably. X amount of dollars were raised back then.
Yeah. And so it's a story of crowdsourcing funding in its original form.
before there was crowdsourcing.
That's right.
And the amount of money raised was extraordinary.
$2.5 million.
Wow.
The equivalent today of close to $40 million
exactly.
in 10 days.
There you go.
By 83,000
wow.
people. Really, 83,000
wow.
households in a city of 250,000.
Wow.
That is
amazing.
What an
extraordinary response.
Has that ever happened anywhere else? Yeah, to that degree.
Not that I'm aware
no.
of.
No, I don't think so.
So they made two monumental decisions at the time. Firstly, to create a monument of scale. You know, if this were on the Washington Mall, it'd be second only to the Washington Monument.
Yes.
Wow.
And then secondly,
wow.
to collect globally, which is, we want to tell the full story of World War One. And so the we have this spectacular collection, only about of which 8% is on exhibition at any one time. So we have this rich reservoir of memory that helps us talk about this catastrophe which began the 20th century and then birthed the American century.
And you know what's cool too? We're talking to the World War One Museum President and CEO, Dr. Matt Naylor. Here on the National Defense, we had one of your archivists on, Matt, about 3 weeks ago, talking about some of the special online exhibitions. And she was also telling us what kind of things that people continue to donate to the museum. And it's everything from teeth to,
yeah.
I mean, just
really?
All kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah. So, you know, because we've been collecting since 1920, our collection is really rich. So sometimes folks come to us and every day people are contacting us because they're looking for a place for their treasured family memories. And we're honored that they would think of us. Often we already have those materials.
Sure.
And they're better off somewhere else. But sometimes, oh my goodness, the materials that are donated to us are absolutely extraordinary, as you've said, and varied. Let me give an example. More recently, a family from west of here, one of the western states, contacted us because their forebear, great-uncle, had served. He was Danish. He was in German-occupied Denmark. He served with the German army, and they had his German uniform with a photograph of him wearing that. In 1916, he came to the United States. He left there. He defected, came to the U.S. by boat, joined his brother. 1917, he was drafted. And then he served under American flag, and they had his
wow.
American uniform and a photograph of him in his American uniform. So we have those on exhibition now. What other museum in the world would have
right.
Would have both uniforms serving under two flags with photographs of? And the provenance of this is unquestionable.
Hey, we're talking to CEO Dr. Matt Naylor from the World War One Museum. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by United Airlines, proud to employ veterans across our entire airline, by CVS and the CVS Minute Clinics, the cure for the common weight, and by SelectQuote. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry, and we got the man over the World War One Museum right here in Kansas City, President and CEO Dr. Matt Naylor. Yeah, it's amazing stuff when you go through the museum. And it kind of boggles my mind that there are people that still live in Kansas City that have never been to the museum.
Yeah.
Because once you go, then you can't stop going.
Yeah, yeah. And if you go, be prepared to take a break,
right.
eat some lunch,
right.
because there's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff there.
And Matt, it's so funny. Did you say only 8% of your materials are on display at any given time?
That's right. We
wow.
have an enormous collection.
Think about that.
Yeah, that wow. we look after. And, you know, it's used by researchers. We loan it to other museums, some of our content as well. And then also we borrow from others. For example, we have an exhibition that opened recently called Vive l'Amérique. It's about the French school children who are welcoming their American allies. A classroom in a boys' school in France, 1917. The teacher has been throughout the war asking them to draw, to write about their the impact of the war. This is, you know, where their fathers would have been killed, their neighbors' fathers, many of them would have been killed, or at least they're serving. And we have 30 drawings and some essays from this boys' class, aged between 8 years old and 13 years old, talking about the entrance of the United States into World War I. It's a really moving exhibition that we've borrowed from a small museum in Paris, in Montelimar. These aren't theoretical drawings or pictures or essays that these boys have written. They are, these kids, it's their experience in 1917. It's very moving.
Wow. Yeah, and you think about this, you know, the 100th anniversary happens of World War One, and if the museum were not there, I mean, what do you do? I mean, where do you commemorate, you know, that situation?
There'd you know? Be no memory.
Right.
You know, there's
yeah.
tremendous sacrifice by the United States. Soldiers maimed beyond belief, killed, gassed.
Yeah, right.
You know, which is in the headlines today.
Exactly, right.
Tremendous tragedy.
And leading up to 1916, a standing army of 100,000. March, April, the U.S. declares war. And then within 15 months, they've got an army which is getting close to 4 million.
Wow.
And they've got more than a million troops then in Europe. Absolutely an extraordinary response. Some of that story is told also on the memorial courtyard outside.
You know,
on the memorial courtyard, we have an outdoor photographic exhibition of the battlefields as they look today. Tens of thousands of people visit the museum online every month, and also tens of thousands come here. Our visitorship grows month after month. And that just tells us that there's a deep vein of interest in the service and sacrifice and what happened in World War One and how it shaped the 20th and continues to shape the 21st century. We're really grateful for the support of our the people of the region who make this happen, who enable us to be the keepers of the stories, to make sure that stories are told of those who served in the Great War.
Hey, Matt, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And I don't know, and Jerry, you weren't here when we did Tug McGraw Foundation.
No.
So Tug McGraw Foundation, you know, of course, attached to celebrity ball player and Tim McGraw's dad, based in California. And they do a tremendous job with PTSD and TBI.
Uh-huh.
And just an incredible. We've got something similar here in terms of celebrity-wise because – and also, of course, they were supported by the Home Depot Foundation.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Home Depot Foundation supports
– everybody.
Yeah.
I know. Well, Steve Peck is with us, the president and CEO of U.S. Vets. Steve is the son of Gregory Peck. Ever heard of him?
I think so.
Yeah, Steve, how are you?
Let's see.
Just fine, and yourself?
Doing great, thank you so much. You know, we were just sitting here before we got on the phone with you, just going back through some of your dad's movies, and wow, what a treasure trove of hits, huh?
Yeah, he had quite a career. I think he was lucky in his career. There's 8 or 10 films that are real classics.
Well, for our show, for the National Defense, you know, Pork Chop Hill, boy, that stands out as
On the beach, the the end of the world,
yeah,
essentially.
Right.
Yeah. And 12 O'Clock High has been used in many, many management programs.
I've watched that a thousand times.
Oh, wow. I bet that's true. Well, and Steve,
several people have come to me and said they that film was used in their leadership management program. So
Of course, the all time classic, probably
Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah,
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Now, didn't he have a relationship with a young girl who starred in that movie for the rest of his life?
Mary Badham played the scout.
Wow.
And they stayed in touch till the end of his life. And he always called her Scout, and she always called him Atticus.
Steve, I didn't know. Was your dad a veteran?
He was not.
Okay.
No, he had hurt his back just before the war. He was called up several times and never passed a physical. So he was, he was one of the few in that generation who didn't serve.
So what got you involved with helping veterans and specifically homeless veterans?
Well, the short story is that I'm a Vietnam combat vet.
Okay.
I was in the Marines in Vietnam.
Oh, well, thank you for your service.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
When were you in country?
I was there 69-70.
Okay, we were there same time. I was with 101st.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, I was up around Da Nang. I was about 15 miles west of Da Nang.
Oh, yep. Happy Valley?
Yeah. As a Forward Observer.
Yeah. Really?
India Company 37, yeah.
Wow, man, that's
awesome action.
Job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was there, yeah. So, I was drafted. Actually, I didn't go out and join. I was drafted while I was still in college. I was able to complete my college degree, but immediately after that, I was either going to become a private in the Army or join the platoon leaders class program in the Marine Corps and go in as an officer, which was my choice.
Well, I mean, didn't you go to tell the draft board, wait a minute, I'm the son of Gregory Peck? I think that's what I might have done. that didn't really matter at that point, I guess.
No, that didn't matter to them. No. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to use that advantage. My dad didn't volunteer. He was a patriot, my dad.
Yep. So
he was not at all happy he was going. My mom was particularly unhappy that I was going, but I was called up like everybody else, so I went.
So if people don't know about U.S. Vets, you're now in more than 14 cities, one of the leaders in housing, employment, and counseling services for homeless veterans. And, it's so important. And, Steve, I heard somebody say the other day, well, homeless veterans really not that much of a problem anymore. Is that true?
No, that would not be true.
Yeah.
I started this. Doing this career in 93, it's a second career for me. I was a documentary filmmaker and had a particular interest in homelessness. I'd done a couple of films in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. And in 89, someone told me that one-third of homeless men at that time were veterans. Mm. And I encountered, I went kind of investigating and down here in Venice Beach here in Los Angeles, found six Vietnam veterans living on the beach and did a story about them.
Hmm.
One of them was a fellow Marine. He was in a wheelchair living in his car. He had a Silver Star in the glove compartment that was pinned on him by Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, gosh.
And it just it really broke my heart. And I thought I was an advocate, but I wanted to do more than that. So in 92, I switched careers and became a social worker at the VA.
Wow. Oh, man.
I'm sorry, Randy.
No, go ahead.
I've been involved with homelessness also, homeless vets for a number of years. What do you think is the major contributing factor to a veteran being homeless? Is it PTSD, or is it they got a problem with the system, or they just don't want to conform? What is it?
There's a whole bunch of reasons. No two stories are alike. I think the myth is that some of them want to be homeless, that they have drug and alcohol problems, that they have mental illness. You know, there's always some sort of judgment on veterans in particular becoming
right.
homeless. And the fact is, they're people who don't have the capacity. They don't have the life skills. They don't have the work skills. Things have happened in their lives that have really caused them to isolate, and it's that isolation and not reaching out to anybody that really ends them up on the street. So at U.S. Vets, when we formed in 93, we had the concept that it's not just housing that they need. We have to address all those reasons that they became homeless. So we have a career center to help them with employment. We have counseling to help them if they have a mental illness, if they have post-traumatic stress, if they have substance abuse problems. Let's deal with all of that while they're housed so that they, while they're with us, they address all those issues and so that we can send them back out into the world as a self-sufficient people.
You know, is it in some cases, you know, remember back then, as I know you do, because you're going to get drafted, the military, you know, they wanted bodies. You didn't need an education. In fact, we had guys I went through basic training with who, they were really illiterate for all sakes and purposes.
We had a couple of those.
so here these guys were put in the uniform, put into a situation. Vietnam was an awful experience, and then they're cut loose. And what do they have? They have no education, no job training that they can transition to. You know, you're trained to use a weapon. What are you going to do in a civilian world? So, and then they have to cope with the memories of combat. And so,
let me ask you a question, Jerry. So, do you think these guys you're talking about, if they had not joined the military, would they have ended up homeless anyway?
Maybe not. They might have stayed on the farm or whatever they did.
Sure.
A lot of people ask that question. Was it the military directly that caused their homelessness?
Right.
And I don't think anyone really knows the answer.
Yeah.
But you're right. If they went in without any real work skills or life experience, they came out pretty much the same way. You know, a rifleman's skills are not very useful in the real world. So there's always been a lack of a safety net. We've always been better at training the guys to go in than preparing them to come out, and that is still the case. And so there really is no safety net for these guys. So at U.S. Vets, that's what we're trying to create, not only housing, counseling, and employment services, but homeless prevention services, reaching out to veterans who need mental health treatment before they become homeless, reaching out to guys who are unemployed or underemployed before they become homeless. So that's the charge that we have now.
So how does a veteran who's confronting these challenges, these issues, how do they get enrolled in your program?
In the 14 cities that we're in, we always have an outreach team. So we go to every agency that may provide some sort of service to the homeless. We're, of course, in touch with the VA. We get a lot of referrals from the VA at this point. We're pretty well known. So we get them in a variety of ways, but you have to stay out there, remind all of these agencies, you know, if you encounter a veteran, we've got a lot of help for them. At this point, we have about 3,000 veterans living in our programs, in our 14 different programs.
And that includes transitional housing too, right, Steve?
It includes both transitional and permanent. There's a big push now for permanent housing.
Sure.
There's been a lot more housing built over the last 20-some years. So we're helping a lot more guys than we used to. But the transitional is where we give them the strong rehabilitation services.
Do you have actual physical campuses, or is this through a referral program?
Oh, yeah. We have housing facilities. Our two largest are here in Southern California. Each of them houses about 550 veterans, and then both in the transitional and permanent housing in a variety of programs. So we have a female veterans program addressing their specific issues. We have a young veterans program. You know, the young vets today have a little different issues than you and I had when we came back. So we address that in a very specific way. So we've tried to tailor the programs to the need as we see it.
And how did you guys get hooked up with the Home Depot Foundation, Steve?
When there's a conference that we go to every year, the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, and that agency, that entity started in 1992, I believe, and it's become a real a place where most homeless programs serving veterans go to once a year, and we get a lot of information about there, about best practices, et cetera. And Home Depot contacted them and said, you know, we want to help homeless veterans, specifically in the area of building facilities for them. And so I met them. I met them there because we're the largest agency in the country that does this. I was introduced to them early on.
Hey, we're talking to Steve Peck. He's the president and CEO of U.S. Vets. We'll be right back here to continue that discussion on the National Defense. Welcome back to the National Defense. Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry and Steve Peck. Gregory Peck's son, is with us, president and CEO of U.S. Vets, doing some great work for homeless veterans. And how did you guys get hooked up with the Home Depot Foundation, Steve?
When there's a conference that we go to every year, the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, and that agency, that entity started in 1992, I believe, and it's become a real a place where most homeless programs serving veterans go to once a year, and we get a lot of information about there, about best practices, et cetera. And Home Depot contacted them and said, you know, we want to help homeless veterans, specifically in the area of building facilities for them. And so I met them. I met them there because we're the largest agency in the country that does this. I was introduced to them early on when they first started.
They're just great folks. I mean, they want to do great stuff for veterans, and they find ways to do that.
They're succeeding,
and they are succeeding. Yeah. But
they are. I mean, they have given. I appreciate their focus. So there's a lot of foundations out there that do a little of this, a little of that. You're never quite sure what they're doing.
Right.
They are laser focused on construction of housing. And at this point, they've given $180 million, I think, to housing programs across the country. It's pretty astounding.
I know that they were they've committed half a billion through 2020 for veterans programs.
They're at it, and they've helped us in about seven of our programs. Our Washington, D.C. program, really, they put us over the top. I'm not sure our D.C. program, which now houses 80 veterans in Southeast D.C., I'm not sure that program would be there without them. So they have really been a lifesaver to us and a bunch of different other agencies.
That's amazing.
So the best way to find out more information would be, the website, usvetsinc.org, and you can find out all about that. And, it's just fascinating. I mean, here's the son of Gregory Peck, who has gone on now to achieve this kind of a legacy in terms of supporting
tremendous legacy.
You know, and then I just can't stop hearing Gregory Peck every time you talk. Yeah. I mean, it's,
when he laughs.
Oh, my, I know.
Steve, from the bottom of our hearts, thanks for everything. Thanks
Absolutely.
For everything. Your service in the Marine Corps and for everything you're doing. I mean, you're close to being a saint.
Yeah, I mean, really.
I'm not sure I'd go that far, but it's been a real privilege to be able to do this work. And,
you
want to do something with that, all that emotion and that experience that we experienced in Vietnam. And
that's great.
this has been a wonderful career.
Steve, thank you so much. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
This has been the National Defense, made possible by Ford. Go further. By the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By SelectQuote. Since 1985, we shop, you save. By Subway. Introducing the Italian hero from Subway. Stacked with capicola, mortadella, and Genoa salami with oil, vinegar, and oregano. Taste the authentic flavor of the Subway Italian hero, limited time only. By PenFed Credit Union. PenFed's got great rates for everyone. By United Airlines. Proud to employ veterans across our entire airline. By CVS and the CVS Minute Clinics, the cure for the common wait. By ADT Security, for over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Sam's Club. Sam's Club is thanking those who serve. Active and former members of the U.S. military are invited to join or renew their membership with up to a $25 gift card simply for signing up. Join or renew today. See Club for details.
Oh, say, can you see? By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars. Through the night that our flag was still there.